No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So call in and be part of the discussion at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your question. I'm sorry, you can go to our chat box. This is a new thing. You can go to our chat box and leave a message, and we'll ask your question for you. We've got two really amazing guests tonight. Maria's not going to be with us because she had something come up in her life. She had to take a day off, as my friend Charles Moreland just said, well-deserved day off, so she won't be with us. But I'm so excited tonight to have two people that I have just the deepest respect for, and that's Representative Charles Moreland, who was the first elected representative in the District of Columbia, and Anise Jenkins, who's the director, the leader of Stand Up for Democracy, which is a public interest group in the District of Columbia that has worked on this issue of statehood for the district for years and is one of the leading nonprofits working on this. And so it's great to have both of you. Thanks so much for being on the show, guys. Are you there?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Well, the first question goes to Anise Jenkins. Do you know why today, July 5th, is the most important day in the month of July?
This is the day that Frederick Douglass made his What to the Slave is the 4th of July speech. That's why it's important to me. I know.
Well,
he made
let me tell you, that's very true and that's very right. But let me tell you why it's important to me. Because it's Charles Moreland's birthday.
I could have answered that, Michael.
Believe that? It's Charles, and he's kind enough to be with us on his birthday. So happy birthday. I have too much respect for you to sing happy birthday to you in my attitude, flat voice. But I just wanted you to know that we so much appreciate you being on the show, Charles, and thank you. I hope you're having a great birthday.
Yeah, well, thank you, Michael and Anise. This is, in fact, my birthday present to myself.
Oh,
I have the honor to be on this show today with you and Anise. And let me take this opportunity to thank the both of you. I mean, you guys have worked so hard. You all are the heart and the soul of the statehood movement. I know how much both of you have given and sacrificed, and I just want to commend you and thank you so much.
Well, and thank you, because
you've been
in the fight a long time, Charles, and many of the things that you told me when I first started this job have come to pass. So I really depend on you for counsel. And Anise is just, you know, like I said, and I've said many times publicly, has been the soul of this movement. She's never lost faith. She's kept the dialogue going, even in times when we talk about something different than statehood. We were willing to compromise, and Anise was out there talking about statehood. So it's an honor to be on with both of you. And let me ask you both to answer this question. What do you think the next step for us, now that we've gotten this through the House, what's the next step for us? Obviously, We've taken a bill. There's a bill S-621, which is companion legislation, which puts our issue in the House. And for those that don't, our listeners who may not know this, the D.C. statehood bill passed the House of Representatives with 232 votes last week, so week before last. So this is an important first step, but what do you guys think is the next step?
I'm going to defer to the birthday boy, Mr. Moreland.
Well, thank you so much. First thing we have to do is understand that this is an opportunity. But we don't need to rest on our laurels, okay, because there's much work to do. Mm-hmm. Close doesn't count when it comes to justice and freedom. Close counts in horseshoes and WMDs. So we have to understand that this is an opportunity, like no other opportunity that we have had before. To kind of put in perspective where we are real quick, there's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the United States Constitution gives the Congress exclusive jurisdiction and control over the District of Columbia. And so Congress has held on to the right to keep us under a system of oppression. We live under a system of political slavery. It is the slavery of taxation without representation, congressional control boards over our money. The United States Congress tells us what we can and cannot do with our own money. 30-day reviews of every piece of legislation. Our so-called elected officials in D.C., every bill, every piece of legislation that they pass, the United States Congress can veto it at any time. And we have no vote in the Congress. It is a system of confused minds, distorted facts, and basic human dignity smothered under a bald-faced claim of congressional privilege. It's a form of slavery that robs us of our humanity, disenfranchises us, and leaves over 700,000 American citizens denied the most basic and inalienable human rights at the price for living in the nation's capital. So what should we do now that the House of Representatives has passed this bill? Well, we have an example already. This situation is so unique because people in the United States have demonstrated, in fact, people all over the world, that they're fed up with injustice, that people are ready to stand up and die for justice for people. And I want to just recite just for a minute what one of the founding fathers said, John Hancock. He said, "We will, in defiance of every hazard, with unbolting firmness and perseverance, employ for the preservation of our liberties, being with one mind resolved to die for freedom rather than to live as slaves." Now, I know D.C. citizens, nobody likes to be called a slave, but no matter how you look at it, we are political slaves. What do we do right now? Now, this is a unique opportunity. Let's do what people have recently done to bring down the Confederate flag, to bring down these statues. I thought I'd never see that. But when people got fed up and decided they weren't going to take it anymore, people got together and got creative. Athletes, artists, entertainers, businesses told the supporters of the Confederate flag that we will not do business with you. So, specifically, I'm right now calling on artists, entertainers, athletes, businesses everywhere to let Mitch McConnell, and we need to identify just, Michael, you can tell me now, just three senators that athletes and artists in their states, and athletes and artists who have plans to perform in their states need to tell those states, we will not perform. We will not support you. Businesses will not sponsor stadiums in states that do not support statehood, because that's how fundamental this injustice is. There's no doubt. This is the most noble liberation movement in America, if not in the on the planet.
Right. Well, let me ask Anise, because Anise has been involved in some of these protests. I think I went to one, but I know you've been out there, Anise, and we see, I think Charles is right, and we see people plugging into the Black Lives Matter movement and this liberation movement that's going on. We've just seen here in Washington, by the way, that it looks like the Washington Redskins are going to change their racist name after all these years.
It's all about Charles Moreland has hit the nail on the head. It's all about money. Okay, yeah. FedEx Field has said they don't want to see the Washington football team back in the stadium with that name. We are at a great opportunity in history to go out there and make our demand. As I said, the 5th of July was the day that Frederick Douglass made his speech about power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. We need to go out in the street and make our demand. Some of these young people need to hear about D.C. statehood, and they will recognize, I have no doubt, that they will recognize the injustice and the horrible inequity that we are being placed with. We are being treated as, he said, political slaves. Slavery is over. We're ending that. The young people are out there and they're saying, this is history. We are not going to be treated this way ever again. We had a revolution in regard to taxation without representation. We have to be fearless. We have to be strong. We have to go out there and make our demand to say, we will not live this way anymore. What other people can you treat this way without a rebellion? What other people can you treat this way without them making these demands? These demands must be made strongly and with force, and we need to go out there now and totally educate people, let them know that this is a plantation and we're being treated like political slaves in the nation's capital. We are the only capital in the world where its residents cannot make its own laws, where its residents are taxed without representation. This is the only country that does that, and we need to be out there every day with the young people. Let them hear our voices. Let our voices be heard. Let's get out there and make our demands. I totally agree with Representative Moreland.
You hit the nail right on the head. The most important thing that you said was now. Statehood now. Not tomorrow. Not later. Justice denied. Delayed is justice denied. Anybody that comes to us with a plan to let's wait until after the election is over is giving us a plan to remain shackled, to remain slaves. Listen, I've been involved in this movement since 1978, and everybody has always had a plan for us to wait. Let's wait the last time until Hillary Clinton is elected.
Right.
Never happened.
Right.
Now, let's wait until we get rid of Donald Trump. It may never happen. Now is the most important word because we live in the now. And we need to demand freedom now. And we need to, and D.C. citizens need to have faith. We can't believe and have people put off our calls as an impossible dream. I want to say that when God is on our side, no dream is impossible when his time comes. That's and right. God Almighty determines what is possible in this world.
Well, and let me tell you.
I want to call your attention real quick to some impossible dreams that I reference that have happened in my lifetime that I've seen. The crushing vestiges of slavery under the Southern Jim Crow Crowism was demolished when the time came for Martin's dream to become reality. I've witnessed the racist, apartheid government of South Africa that had stubbornly resisted a violent liberation struggle. The South Africans are free of that apartheid system. The election of Barack Obama was an impossible dream. Okay? The state of Mississippi took down the Confederate flag. That was an impossible dream, but it happened. Yeah. Now the time has come for taxation without representation to end in Washington. Yes, ours is a movement whose time has come, and I want every American, not just Washingtonians, to do something. We're here to make a just demand for freedom, and Mitch McConnell, we want to ask you now. It's in the Senate. The bill goes to the Senate. Take your knee off the necks of Washingtonians. We can't breathe.
Well, that's very well said. And I got to say that, you know, one of the things that I've noticed from all the stuff that's been going on, I think it's represented in the statue in Lincoln Park of the Emancipation Statue, which they want to take down. You know, at first when I heard about that, I was outraged. I said, this was a statue that was paid for by slaves. Frederick Douglass dedicated it. What's the problem? And then I looked at it and I went, oh, yeah, I can see what the problem is. I can see why this statue offends people. I can see why they want it to come down. And I mean, that to me is a really important thing that we've now, the country seems to refocus its attention on things that have always been there, but we, at least as white middle class America goes, we've ignored. And we're now hearing young people say, look, if you're not, again, like we said back in the 60s, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So let me ask you, don't we need to put some money into this to change people's attitudes, to make them look at what's going on in the district? Because as both of you rightly point out, when people see this injustice, they understand it, and I think they're willing to stand up against it, but not enough people see it. What can we do to get more people to see it?
We need to become visible. We need to come out of the shadows. We need to be fearless. That's what, these things happen in waves. Freedom comes in waves. It comes in waves. People get the feeling because they see it out there and they know they can dive in and do something about it. We have to get out there, be visible. We have to let people know what we need. If we need more money, we need to ask for it.
Yeah.
We have a nonprofit. Stand Up for Democracy is a nonprofit.
Right.
You can write it off on your taxes.
Right.
But I tell you what, we need more than that.
Yeah.
Let me be clear here. I know where Michael
is
going. Michael, you are absolutely right.
Yeah, we need
in
a bunch
any
of
democratic government, the first and highest duty of an elected official is to stand up for the democratic rights of their constituents. And a government which will not spend the people's money to fight for democratic rights of its citizens is not a government at all. All who hold office in such a government are make-believe politicians pretending that politics, and I don't mean to step on any toes here.
Me either.
But we got to call it like it is.
Right.
Your priorities are where your money is.
Right.
And the D.C. government has yet to fully fund the congressional delegation consisting of individuals like you, Michael, who I know the time and energy and effort that the delegation puts in. But you need to be funded to the same extent that any other. You are a senator.
That's right.
And let me look for a minute at some of those people in Congress, too, who claim to be our friends. The same self-righteousness that drove the revolutionary soldiers to war beats in the monstrous hearts of every member of the United States Congress. Yes, each man and woman in Congress, I say you are a monster, tyrant, or coward, either by intent or design, by your cowardly acquiescence as willing accomplices to the cruelty of the slave master. Okay, and one other thing that every member of Congress should do, and I'm calling them to do it, members of the House, let the Senate know that you're not going to continue with business as usual as long as 700,000 United States citizens are reduced to nothing more than political slaves on the government's plantation. Stop Mitch McConnell. Let him know that this has to end now, because we're about, like I said, Anise, the most important word you said is now, and we need to go all out. We cannot accept this anymore. Congress, let us breathe.
And well, I feel that the statehood delegation should not allow for itself to be put on the sidetrack. They are not invited to some of these hearings. They need to be at these hearings. They need to be there in person, alive and in person. We don't want you to have to sit in your office or go to work like Franklin Garcia has been doing. You need to be there when they have hearings. When you are a senator, you need to be there. You shouldn't have to be invited. That's ridiculous. You were elected at large, just like the mayor, just like the council members. You need to be there and speak for us. Speak for your constituents. You need to receive money, and you need to be there in the mix. You shouldn't be sidelined.
You need to be fully funded.
Like
you're absolutely right. I can remember when the statehood bill was introduced in 1993. Okay, we had 81 co-sponsors, but we took the lead. In fact, people don't know that it was Jesse Jackson, myself, and Florence that went to Eleanor, and we said, Eleanor, this bill needs to be introduced. I had talked to Ron Dellums. And Ron Dellums, who was chair of the House District Committee at the time, he said, listen, Charles, you guys need to stand up. And so Eleanor agreed, even though we knew the bill would fail. Eleanor agreed that no matter what, we need to take this forward and force the House to vote on it. And they did. It failed 153 to 277. But you know, we need to make sure that we support our delegation. It's important to remember that when that bill went to the House, Jesse Jackson, Florence Pendleton, and myself, we spoke, we testified before the House District Committee.
Right.
Mayor Kelly, Kevin Chavis, and I believe John Wilson was with it. So we all testified, but under the lead of Eleanor and the entire D.C. statehood delegation. So I agree with you. We need to respect our elected officials and support them, the state D.C. statehood delegation. I know what they're going through.
Well, let me, before we move on, we have a caller. Maria, are you there? Is our caller there?
Yes, I am.
The question.
I am.
Okay, do you have a question?
Yes, I am resident in the District of Columbia since 1993. I know exactly the delegation, statehood delegation, since the beginning. And I feel like the delegation has been pushed aside, and this delegation should be working together with the Mayor Bowser, because this movement is not just two people movement. It's the whole team. So I think for effectiveness of this movement and reach what we all looking for, because I want to stay hood, the Mayor Bowser should invite everybody. I don't see anybody from those days when the team even was every day, almost every day in the street, demanding taxation without representation. And I don't see a mayor inviting anyone to this meeting, to this plan. And this takes more than two people. We are residents of the District of Columbia, and we are ready to go out in the streets. So why is this that the mayor can't invite the team who has been working hard even all these years, and they can work together? I don't know why the delegation is ready. Somebody can explain me this?
Well, you know, Maria, I think that the question you just asked is a major question in the movement. Why we're not more included? Why, for example, organizations like Nisa's organization that's been involved in this for so long, you know, the District of Columbia last year, for every dollar it gave out in grant money for statehood, it gave out $70 for arts and humanities. It put out $14 million in arts and humanities grants, and I believe in the arts and humanities, but it only put out $200,000 in grants to organizations like ANISES and other nonprofit organizations in the District of Columbia that work on statehood. And I've never really understood why they won't include us, why they don't want to make the movement broader, not only nationally, which I think we need, but also locally, which we also need, because we definitely need more support from people like Maria. We need to get, you know, it's really great to hear you say the things you're saying, Marie, but we need to get other people like you out there and do what Anise is saying. Do, you know, join in the movement.
Yeah.
Get moving. So, Charles, or Anise, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I totally agree with her. People are being pushed aside. Just come on and march with us, work with us. If you see us out there, join us. You'll see the
Texas
flag.
Yes, we have elected a representative for the statehood and should be recognized.
Yes,
everybody in the delegation, every single one. Yes,
I totally agree.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, so thank you for answering my question. Thank you,
Maria. Thanks so much for calling in. And that's true. You know, we went before the Senate on Friday. I'm about to put in testimony tomorrow complaining about this. But we went in front of the Senate, and it was the mayor and it was our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, and that's appropriate. But we're in the Senate, and neither one of the senators were even invited to participate. The only thing that was said about us is that Chris Van Hollen, the senator from Maryland, was nice enough to mention us and thank us. And somebody else from a local businessman read a statement that we should be involved. But yeah, and I'm going to write the Senate tomorrow. I'm putting in testimony and say, look, if the people of the that are running the District of Columbia don't recognize us, you need to recognize us, because we were elected by the same people that elected them. So that's a very good point. Let me ask you guys, this is something that really perplexes me. Why does Lindsey Graham, who's just come out with these two other senators to talk about how D.C. statehood is going to have a dramatic negative impact on South Carolina? I really haven't quite figured that out yet. But why is he asking for a floor vote? That's what we want. We want a floor vote. And he knows what McConnell's sentiments are. Do you think, either one of you, do you think that they're trying to get a floor vote now because they understand that the bill will be defeated and they want that defeat on the books because they think it'll be harder to pass it next time? Do you think that's the thing? Or?
Well, I think that Lindsey Graham is bluffing, or he fails to realize the power of the people. When the people get fed up and they make a just demand, they will succeed. There are those who don't believe in our cause, but if the universe bends towards justice, and I believe it does, then it is injustice that cannot prevail, and justice will. So I think we'll call it bluff and not do what we've been doing before. Lindsey Graham and the Republicans believe that D.C. citizens, even in light of all the demonstrations and the demand for justice all over the world, he's taking for granted that D.C. citizens are going to continue to do what we've always done, and that is beg the Congress to give us our freedom. Well, the fact of the matter is, I don't think for a minute, and I never have thought it, Michael, you know that, and I've said it for almost 40 years, that we're talking about control of the most important piece of real estate on the planet. And the members of Congress are not going to just all of a sudden wake up and say, okay, we're going to give y'all your freedom. We got to demand it. The time has come for us to stand up, as Anise has been saying, and go out, just like you see people all over America and the world, because we have begged and pleaded in as humble a fashion as any slaves have ever begged for their freedom. So now it is time for us to demand it. No justice, no peace.
Well,
I think we should look at who's saying this. Is this the same Lindsey Graham who was against Donald Trump for years, who made fun of him, put him down? Is this the same Lindsey Graham that we used to hear from all the time? I think he speaks with forked tongue. I think we better watch him. Watch him and make sure we're understanding what he's saying, because he wants this to go through the universe like a speeding bullet, faster than a speeding bullet. I think he thinks he can stop it. He's not Superman. Lindsey Graham is not Superman, and he's not speaking what he really feels. Better watch him.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. I feel like all of a sudden it's kind of suspicious, and I hope Charles is right. I hope he just doesn't get it. But, you know, I've never heard him stand up and say that he wants to do what the activists and what the people of D.C. want him to do, which is to bring this to a floor vote. So it does make me suspicious of what their motivation is. Let me ask you this question, and I hesitate to ask it because I don't want to upset my good friend Anise, but what if they try to negotiate something? What do you think about this? In other words, I was in business for a long time, and I was thinking, hey, look, if it were me, and I've been hired, and Charles knows exactly about this because he was hired to do this, wouldn't I go over to the Senate and say, look, they're about to jam two Democratic senators down your throat, and you've got two senators, Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, who are talking about getting rid of the filibuster. So you guys better do something. Maybe you better give Eleanor a vote. Do you think they'll do something like that? They'll go for it? I asked this question last week of Jamie Raskin, and Raskin said he thinks we've gone too far down the road of statehood to turn back. Do you guys think that's true? We've gone too far down the road to turn back? That they won't try to negotiate something lesser?
Michael, lesser?
Yeah.
We live. We live in a union of states, the United States. That means everything that is a state is entitled to all the rights. Any entity other than a state has inferior rights to the states, and that's the situation that we have now. We know, and we've looked at and considered every other solution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 gives the Congress exclusive jurisdiction and control over D.C. And so as long as we are not a state, we will, the people of D.C. will not, cannot have rights equal to states. So Johnny Barnes, and you can't even talk about statehood and the statehood bill without talking about Johnny Barnes. Brilliant. Johnny Barnes in 1992 came up with a solution. How do you get around the fact that the Constitution says that Congress has to have control over the federal district? What the statehood bill does, it shrinks the district to the federal buildings, because it's important to understand and remember how we got here. It was by many historians say it was by historical accident, if I may for a minute go back, so people will, who don't know will understand. The Continental Congress had been meeting all over the place, in Philadelphia, New York, all over the place. Primarily, they were running from the soldiers, revolutionary soldiers, who had not been paid. So they were meeting in Philadelphia, and the soldiers surrounded them. Now, well, the Congress snuck out, but they decided that from now on, they will never meet, because they called on the Pennsylvania governor to come and save them, and the government in Pennsylvania said, no, we ain't getting involved in this. So the Congress decided we will never have that situation again because the federal government was weak, and so we're going to set up and establish a place where we don't have to worry about that anymore. So it was a historical accident. At the time when they moved to D.C., there were only a few hundred people. D.C. was a swamp, didn't really have a population. And if you look at the map of D.C., it was originally just a total square, 10 miles in all directions. But if you look at it now, a third of it has been swiped out, and that is because there were citizens in Alexandria and in Virginia who realized that they were being disenfranchised. And they fought for decades until finally they decided, no, we're pulling back. So they retroceded and took that part of Virginia out because they did not want to give up their rights. Well, Maryland, the Maryland section stayed in, and that's who we are now. So it was an accident. It was never intended. The founding fathers thought that the principle of no taxation without representation was so firm and so entrenched that they didn't need to put it in the Constitution. So they didn't anticipate what we have now. So now we have to make that adjustment, shrink the size of the federal enclave, and make the remaining area the 51st state. That's the only solution that will resolve our problem. Maryland don't want to have us retrocede back to Maryland.
That's right.
It would upset the politics of the state of Maryland. The only way that 700,000 United States citizens can become full participants in our American democracy is statehood. There's no other way.
There is no compromise. I would just like point out that we've been down this road before. Somebody was throwing out that if Utah got an extra vote, D.C. could get an extra vote. The people of D.C. said, no, we're not accepting that. We don't want that. We told Delegate Norton, no, we're not going to compromise. We want statehood. We know what we deserve, and we want statehood. We're standing firm on that. We are not compromising. We're not letting any of our elected officials compromise our rights. We want to be full citizens. That's what we deserve.
If they take the chains off one leg, you're still in chains. He's still a slave. You can't be half a slave no more than you can be half pregnant.
That's right.
I get
half
it.
A slave is still a slave.
That's that. So that
incremental
right.
approach.
Not going.
We've dealt with that before.
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, and you know
and
what?
That won't work.
The only thing that scares me about it, about that, is that we still see incrementalism out there. We still see them, D.C. Appleseed fighting in a court, and we still see bills being introduced. That are let you know we're going to call the mayor governor and we're going to call Phil the you know the speaker of the house or whatever, but and so that gives me a little concern sometimes that yes we still in a sense have one foot on the platform and one foot on the train and we all need to be on the statehood train moving it the same direction in, you know, at 100 miles an hour. I agree with you guys 100%. And yes, and I think that you just restored my faith that people would not stand for this. They would not stand for any kind of compromise short of you know. I always
it would
say,
be ridiculous, Michael. For
right,
many years, statehood has been pushed aside for some less
right.
drastic solutions.
Right.
By those who would accommodate tyranny for
right.
achievable goals.
Right.
But,
and that, you know, and that's one of the things that I always say about Anise Jenkins, when there were many of us that were willing to set to compromise in order to get a single vote, she wouldn't do it. She stood up there for statehood. She really was the soul of the movement. And, you know, you and I, you tell the story many times, Charles, about how you were converted over to statehood after you were sent out to kill the idea and you realized that it was the only right way to proceed. And me too. When I first started, there was a
decent vote. Yeah, I remember, Michael, when you were an incrementalist talking about voting
yeah.
rights.
Right.
The voting rights bill.
Right.
I'm not going to laugh.
Well, it's laughable. A
well,
bill that would give our delegate
yeah.
a vote in the House
right.
that only counted when it didn't count. If her vote
if
was ever the vote that would break a tie,
right.
it wouldn't count.
That's
and
right.
we've seen mm-hmm. this happen. See, the problem, other problem with that is if the so-called voting rights bill or any other bill that does not make us a state can be rejected. We've seen this happen
That's
before.
Right.
Eleanor
yeah.
Was granted a right to vote in a Democratic
mm-hmm.
House. But when the Republicans came in, they took the vote away.
It's the first thing
you
they
can't,
did.
You can't be half free. You're either free or you're not.
Right.
And any entity in our union of states that is not a state, the citizens will have inferior rights.
Well,
so we remember doing the talking about the stimulus package, how they labeled D.C. a territory, although
yes.
we're a territory that pays federal taxes.
Right.
I think we're the only territory that pays federal taxes. They will call us anything if we let them.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. We lost over $750 million because there was a formula for the COVID pandemic relief for every state. There was a formula for distribution of the money to every state. Well, they decided to treat the citizens of D.C. to treat the District of Columbia like a territory, not a state. That when it comes to every duty and responsibility, D.C. has the duties of a state. We have the duty to pay taxes like states. Other territories don't do that. We have the duty to serve in wars like a state. Every other territories don't do that. In every measure, in every requirement of being a state, the District of Columbia has that responsibility. But when it comes to our rights, we do not have the we have no vote in the Congress. Do you understand what that means? That violates a principle as old as the Magna Carta, where the King of England said, we will not take a man's horse or his carriage or bale of hay unless he gives us his approval directly or through a representative. That is the foundation of democracy. If you don't have a voice in how your money is spent, and D.C. pays more taxes than many states, 22. A higher
22.
Yeah, 22 states. 22 states. So we perform our duties. You know, our citizens serve in the wars, and they won't give us our rights. This is a shameful system of government. If you take this system of government and try to impose it anywhere else in the world, the citizens would take up arms
Rise
and shoot
up.
You dead, just like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and the Revolutionary soldiers did. This is unacceptable. There are other people that accept it, that take it. People wonder, how do D.C. citizens accept this? Michael, you and Anise, maybe you all can help address that. I can't stand it. I can't breathe.
I don't.
Especially when people right now all over the world are demanding
That's
freedom
right.
and justice. And I wake
That's
up every
right.
day.
We're in the middle of a revolution.
And you know what?
We are in the middle of a revolution. We better wake up and see that.
Well, right, and we better get on the right side of it too, because
be on the right side of history.
Right. And you know what? I can't think of a more clear example of systemic racism than disenfranchising 325,000. That's how many black people we have in Washington, 325,000. And we rise up, you know, we get all upset when 1,200 black voters can't vote in South Carolina. And I agree with that. We should be upset. But why aren't we upset about 325,000 African-American voters here in the District of Columbia who have no voice? And I think you guys are absolutely right. And our challenge really is getting the word out to America, because I think that both of you have said this, and I think it's true, that people will stand behind this once they know about it. But for the most part, they don't know about it. You know, I travel all over the country, and I've traveled to Europe. Last year, I was given an award in India by Mother Teresa University for the work that I've done on statehood. And, you know, people don't know about it. They're shocked. They're like, what do you mean? I once lectured a group of college presidents. There wasn't a man or woman in the room that didn't have a PhD, and they all understood that we didn't have statehood, but we didn't have statehood, but they didn't understand we couldn't spend our own tax money. They said, what do you mean? You can't. Oh, you can spend your own tax money. You can't spend the money that the federal government gives you without approval. I'm like, no, our local tax. They and they're like, what? They asked me like three times. They're like, what? Well, no, not like the school, like your property taxes. I go, yeah, like our property taxes. The president of the United States signs off on two budgets, the federal budget and the D.C. budget. And they couldn't wrap their minds around it. So, yeah, we got a lot of work to do to get out and let America know what this problem is. And what you said, Charles, I mean, the proof, you know, they say the proof is in the pudding. Well, we're the only country in the world that does this. You're right. People around, nobody else in the world would tolerate this. You know?
Australia designed their government and their constitution after ours.
Yep.
But when they looked at the voting rights of the citizens of their capital, Canberra, they gave the citizens of their national capital the right to vote in the legislature. as has every other nation in the world that lays claim to any democracy. You mentioned something about the racial animus towards Washington, D.C. Well, when I first started this, D.C. was about 80% black. And so we found a handbook that the opposition had. And they had an argument that D.C. was too black, too liberal, that we suffered from the four twos, they called it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Too black, too liberal, too democratic, and too urban. Well, D.C. now is only about 46% black.
Right.
So that is not the reason, can't be the reason. Okay?
Right. Right, and for the first 160 years, we were predominantly white.
Right.
It wasn't until the 1960s.
Exactly. So this struggle has been going on for well over 200 years, you know, the struggle. So there is no justification for denying us our rights. Instead of facing
but
the terrible truth about injustice and the shamefulness of this ongoing disenfranchisement of Washington, even our citizens think that political slavery is not so bad. That, like you're talking about, that it just needs a little tweaking here and there.
That's the problem.
All right, go ahead, Denise.
It needs to be clearly pointed out the rights that we do not have. D.C. citizens should not just be proud of being in the nation's capital. It should mean something. The fact that you live in the capital means that you don't have representation in the House or the Senate. The fact that you live in the nation's capital means that you cannot determine how your tax money is spent. The fact that you don't live in that you live in the nation's capital means that the president can sit the local national guard on you during a peaceful demonstration. That's what it means. It's nothing to be proud of. I used to be really proud that I lived in Washington, D.C. I could go down to North Carolina and tell my cousin, yeah, I live in D.C. They were envious of me. But when I grew up, I realized that it was nothing to be proud of. It was something to be ashamed of, that I was taken, these rights were taken from me because of where I live.
Well, you know, again, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I hope that we can unite around this issue and that we can plug into the movement that's going on right now, because this is a very clear example of what people are talking about, rules that have been in place which support the one class of people by holding down another class of people. And so I really think that we have a kindred spirit here that we can plug into. And I'm going to give each one of you, we're almost out of time, 1 minute for a last reflection. Anise, go ahead. What do you want to say?
I would like to just say thank you for having us on. I hope people are listening and understand, and they want to join this demand. Remember, oppression concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. We got to go out and join those young people and make our demand.
And wear your mask.
And
will you do me a favor and give your website in case people want to contribute to Stand Up for Democracy?
A lot of people call us Free DC. You go to www.freestandupfordemocracy.org. FreeDC.org, and there's a donation button on our website. Thank you so much.
And Charles Moreland, you have the last word. It's your birthday. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Well said, Anise. The truth about our so-called leaders and elected officials in D.C. Is that they don't realize that history is going to judge them harshly. They allow or they concede to a system of injustice and disenfranchisement. And I think that every elected official from this day forward ought to make the democratic rights and the freedom of Washington, D.C. citizens their highest priority. Instead of facing the terrible truth about the injustice and shamefulness of the ongoing disenfranchisement, many of them seem to be convinced that political slavery is not so bad, that with a little tweaking here and there, Washingtonians should remain happy and satisfied with their lives on the government's plantation. But I want to let all of them know that D.C. citizens are saying, as Anise and Michael and you and so many D.C. citizens for years, we need to breathe the air of democracy and freedom, the same air and the same freedom and democracy that every other American inherits as a birthright. And those who don't know about D.C. statehood clearly understand what Michael and Anise have been saying. We are denied the fundamental right that the inalienable right that this government has promised everybody. But D.C. citizens don't have it. It is intolerable. And we need everybody in America to turn out and be creative. Do everything that you can to help overturn this system of injustice.
Well, I couldn't have said it better. Thank you, Representative Charles Moreland and Anise Jenkins. You two inspire me, and I know you inspire many other people. And I try to think, we leave every week with a song, and I tried to think of some happy birthday song for Charles, but I couldn't find anything that was appropriate. So this song goes out to Charles Moreland and Anise Jenkins. Here's The Climb by Miley Cyrus, because it's all about the effort, and you guys have put in such a great effort. Thanks, folks, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You, Senator
Thank
Brown.
You, Michael. Thank you, Anise.
Thank you.
Statehood now.
I can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying, you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.